Welcome back in, hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And as we do every week at this time, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee. Clark, what's going on? How are we doing?
Good morning. Doing well. Just back at it here. Excited to be on with you guys.
Well, excited to have you on with us. So, Clark, as you look at the tape from the Kentucky game, 34-17 loss, obviously, what stands out to you from your team and their performance this past Saturday against the Wildcats?
Well, we're disappointed. I mean, we had a stretch in the second quarter where we, right at the end of the first quarter, second quarter, where there was like two passes for a touchdown and a possession for Kentucky. We turned around. That made it 14-3. We turned around and threw a pick six, 21-3, and then had a three and out and missed hit a punt and three runs and a touchdown. So 21 points in a quick burst there in the second quarter, really kind of took us out of it. But, from that point forward, I was proud of the way we battled. And, the guys stayed in the fight. And in the second half, we're able to outscore Kentucky 14-3, and that's obviously not something that we celebrate, but I think it's a sign of the fact that the guys are competing and they're making the competitive decision, and they're in it and they're fighting for each other, and we can build on that, but we have to be better through all four quarters. We have to play better football, better complementary football earlier in the game to give us a chance to be in a tight game late. And that's the goal and that's the vision. And now we'll have to do that in Oxford.
And Clark, of course, Ken Seals comes back in that game. Mike Wright comes in, gives you a spark. I mean, we've asked you about the quarterbacks all year, of course, but first of all, how would you evaluate both of those guys in the last time out, and how do you approach that Saturday at Ole Miss?
Well, Ken had a great week. He'd been away for a while, obviously, but stayed engaged. Great week of prep, and felt like he came out and was able to get some rhythm and some conversions early. We were having some success early down and moving the ball. What was coming back up for us, which we haven't had to deal with since earlier in the season, was an element of self-sabotage. So it felt like we'd convert a first down, and as we were ready to go tempo or ready to establish some rhythm, we had a couple of offsides penalties or false starts where we got behind the chains, which hurt. But obviously with Ken, he took a couple sacks and then threw the interception and just got banged up. And so in the second half, he felt like he wasn't in position to be able to give us our best chance. He was hurt, and so Mike was ready, and I was proud of the way Mike stepped in and was able to orchestrate a couple drives. We want to be methodical on offense from a standpoint of being able to control the game, but we want to finish our drives with touchdowns, and we were able to do that in the second half, and that's something we can build on. So I thought both guys played well. I thought that the one glaring kind of hiccup was the interception, but I think we still need an element of comfort in the pocket. We still need the ability to step up and throw the ball over the middle, those will continue to be focuses for us here as we close out the season.
Clark, obviously some tough news on Davion Davis. How important has he been to your group, and how do you guys try to move on without him now for these last two games as you move forward?
Well, there's two holes to fill there. One is he's obviously a talented player who's given us a lot of snaps this season, a lot of good snaps, and we'll miss him in that respect. And then there's the emotional, angle. He's the heartbeat of our team. He's been a leader through example from the first day that I stepped onto campus. The good news is that he was out at practice yesterday. He's going to be around. He's going to be involved. He's going to be spirited. He's going to he's going to find a way to have impact on this team, even as he's not able to play. We hurt for him. You know, it's hard when a guy like that goes down, and as a coach, you would just do anything that you could to have him be healthy. But these things happen for a reason. I know that Davian's going to be a warrior battling back. He'll come back stronger, and this will be a part of his story. But in the meantime, we'll miss him on the field. We'll certainly enjoy having him off the field and him bringing his full personality and emotional investment, and that'll help us, again, close out the season the way that we want to close it out.
So, Clark, I look at your schedule, and I know that, you know, this is like the rat poison of, you know, coach talking to media, me looking, you know, beyond the week that you're focused on. But it is interesting to me that you guys finish with Ole Miss and Tennessee and those two offenses, which are kind of similar. First of all, what is the transition like going from Kentucky and the way they play to Ole Miss? And I guess, is there any, you know, benefit in the continuity of, like, you, at the end of the season here, you've got some of the same concepts, I'm assuming, some of the same keys on defense to try to have success?
Yeah, I think it's like, do you want the good news or the bad news? The good news is that you're gonna be preparing for two offenses that are, they're similar in makeup, similar in DNA. The bad news is they're both really good, really explosive, and they play very fast, you know? And so it's a test to your systems. We have to, you know, we have to be, you know, the tempo offenses, it's not always the design that's the challenge. The challenge is, can you get 11 players lined up with the cleats in the grass, ready to play aggressively, and how the tempo steals that from you at times. And that's where they find explosive plays. And most times, you know, complexity, you know, offensively and design comes a number of different ways. For example, for, you know, playing against Stanford earlier in the year, it's a power run game, and it's the constant changing of personnel grouping. So you're constantly trying to figure out who's in, how do we match up with them, how do we make sure we have the right defensive personnel on the field. And, you know, it's hard. It can be stressful. You know, Kentucky, you know, has a little more of a pro style design, but, you know, they're big and physical, and they were physical up front. They did a nice job establishing a run game. They got a big physical back, and a quarterback that can get the ball in the play action game down the field. You know, and that creates stress. And then, you know, obviously with these tempo offenses, sometimes you're going to know the play that's coming. I mean, the formations and the plays aren't as multiple because the only thing they're focused on is how fast they can line up and snap the ball. And what happens is, you know, we can get lulled to sleep watching this on film saying, oh, this is, you know, it'll be this play, it'll be that play. And in the moment, it's about, do you have the toughness to hustle into alignment? And do we have the systems to keep guys fresh so that, again, in the moment, we're able to line up and play aggressively through to the finish? Because when you don't, you get moved, and the run game becomes explosive. When you don't, your eyes get sloppy, and, you know, you get 11 guys trying to attack a play action that becomes a throw over the top. And that's how you end up with these teams scoring 50 and 60 points. It's the design. So we have to be really detailed in the way we combat that. And that's, I don't think that's just a defensive problem. You know, what we want to get to the point of awareness is that, you know, our offense and the ability to move the ball methodically and the ability to convert third downs and to score points in the red zone, that becomes a huge factor in keeping Ole Miss's offense out of rhythm. And so, you know, we're trying to interlock all three phases to understand how important it is, because you have a very dangerous offense that you're playing against, and we need to be equipped and support the defense at every turn.
Talking to Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee. Clark, the renderings and details came out on massive, you know, facilities projects for athletics at Vanderbilt, massive investment. Now that, you know, there's pictures for people to see, I mean, it looks awesome. I'm just wondering, from your perspective, what would be the biggest benefit of any of these projects for your program?
Oh man, I is this? Do I have the full hour here? Or do we have to? No, it's there's a lot, but I would say, obviously, maybe I'll just split it into two categories. The first is like, you know, the actual training grounds, where the spaces that you're training your teams. Like, we're going to be state of the art when it comes to, our ability to train our team in a strength and conditioning mode, our ability to recover our team. Like, there's science that has developed over the last, McGugan was a 1990s, structure. I mean, there's a lot of science that's come along that will help our team in defining spaces in this new building to house those approaches to recovery, into holistic development. I think is going to be so huge in building a sustainable program. The convenience of having everything rolled out. So, from offices to meeting rooms to locker room to weight room to indoor, the convenience there is through the roof. So you look at fall camp and you say, okay, let's say it's 100 degrees outside and, we have the ability to start our practice in the indoor. Like we can choose when we want the heat exposure and choose when we want to be inside. And that may sound like a little thing, but compound that over a month, and that is a huge advantage to maintaining your team and not just beating them up in the weather, right? I mean, it's incredible. Right now, like if lightning strikes in practice, we have to run up to the indoor. Well, we'll just kind of roll into the inside portion and keep practice going. So there's a lot there about just training the team, how we practice, how we train, that will be huge. But I think almost as big is just the statement. And I think for anyone who loves Vanderbilt University, Vanderbilt athletics, and certainly Vanderbilt football, this is such a moment. It's a moment of legacy. I mean, I've been around this program since I was a kid. The stadium hasn't really changed since I was a boy watching, the games with my dad. And to me, it's like, wow, what an opportunity, what a moment to be a part of the change that transforms the structures within this program that will allow this program to be competitive and sustain success over the long haul. We're in a moment of shifting ground in college athletics and shifting ground specifically in college football. We need to equip this program to have the ability to launch into its potential. And, what we're going to do in this Vandy United project is we're going to become state-of-the-art, first class, top of the line in terms of our facilities. And that is going to go hand-in-hand with us offering that best student-athlete experience in the country. And so, to me, it's the statement that's being made about the importance of football at Vanderbilt, the importance of athletics at Vanderbilt, and how the kind of the next chapter, I think, of our great university is just this total investment in our program. And I couldn't be more excited about that. And I want for everyone to feel the energy around that. So, we're all rolling our sleeves up and going to work to make sure this thing is absolutely top of the line. The coolest thing about the Vandy United campaign to me is that the first $100 million came right from our university. I think that statement in and of itself is saying, like, this is so critically important, not just to the football coach, not just to, Dr. Lee, the athletics director, but to our chancellor, our university community. And that is a statement that will resonate with our fan base, obviously with our team currently. And then as we recruit, it's seeing that visible sign of investment that acknowledges the fact that we're interested in this being a different moment for Vanderbilt football.
Vanderbilt football coach Clark Lee has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joins us every Wednesday morning at 7 o'clock. Clark, appreciate so much you taking time to be with us this morning, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Hopefully we can get you back over here sometime.
That's right.
So I didn't mind the donuts and coffee. So
that's right.
I mean, donuts with bacon on them? I mean, you know, I'm coming anytime.
That's right. It's like a smoke signal for the two of us.
Yeah. Real good, guys. Good to be with you.
You too, Clark. Appreciate you. We'll come back. We'll react a little bit to what Vanderbilt coach Clark Lee had to say there. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. The deal this week, a $30 gift card for only $15 to Brooklyn Bowl. Pro tip, give their iconic legendary fried chicken a try. You won't regret it. Watch your favorite artists live from the lanes with an incredible view. You can get your deal now at thegamenashville.com/deals. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions. Right here. Remember, FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. The renderings that you brought up with Clark Lee of the Vandy United project, they look pretty awesome out there at Vanderbilt. I'm excited to see what the finished product is going to look like and what sort of a difference this could make for Clark Lee and that football program as he continues to move forward here.
Yeah, and Candace Lee also yesterday referenced, you know, some Hawkins Field stuff as well. I mean, the football stadium with the two end zone additions, if you look at the renderings, they're all over the internet, you know, that are tied to these buildings as well. To, you know, it's a pretty crafty way to do it, and both end zones are gonna be very different, and there's also going to be luxury seating added as a result of that and things like that. So I think that'll be great. I mean, there's still like some stadium infrastructure stuff too for the, you know, fan experience. I mean, there's always something, you know, but when this is all done, I mean, it's going to be, I think, pretty transformative over there. And especially like the most important things, if you talk to coaches, especially on the recruiting front, is your space, and Clark Lee got into that a lot about their training and how it'll help them, but also on the recruiting front, you know, your football building and your basketball building. And so the men's and women's basketball teams and the football team are going to have, you know, state-of-the-art stuff that is so, so far beyond what they've had for a long, long time. I mean, the facilities thing wasn't really even, I'd say even like 30 years ago, you know, it was important and people updated their facilities and stuff like that. But right around then, once you got into the 90s, just everything just ramped up. Salaries and assistant salaries and the important, you know, and it is, when you look at the whole thing, sometimes it's like, what world is this, you know? But bottom line is, if you're going to compete, you're going to try to compete in the SEC in football or in athletics, yeah, you have to be competitive. You have to be reasonable, and this is going to get Vanderbilt to a totally different place. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what that means. Because if you want to base it on investment and facilities and stuff like that, you know, I mean, Vanderbilt has been so far behind. It's like, how do they win ever? You know, but they've been able to be competitive, and this could really be significant for them.
The college football playoff rankings out again last night, and not much drama to these. The same in the top seven as last week. Georgia at 1, Alabama 2, Oregon 3, Ohio State 4, Cincinnati 5, Michigan 6, Michigan State at number 7. Obviously, Notre Dame moving up to number 8 with Oklahoma losing to Baylor. Oklahoma down to 13, so they're, you can just move them to the wayside. Bye-bye. They're pretty much done. Oklahoma
State,
They do have a bye-bye week. Oklahoma State is at 9, and I guess they've still got a shot.
Yeah.
But I would call it probably an outside chance. So the top 7 remaining unchanged in the college football playoff rankings.
Oklahoma State needed Oklahoma to not lose.
Yep.
They need to beat them. And so now they're – yeah, that's – there was somebody who projected Oklahoma State in the playoff. I'm like, what? Really? No. So the Michigan State thing has become, I mean, thank goodness they have this. I swear they just did it so that there's something to talk about with these rankings. Like the fact these come out every week and we got to have an hour special about them is just hilarious. I will say, and frankly, I don't have that big of a, to me, all you have to say is, Yes, I know head-to-head. Yes, I know head-to-head. All you have to say is Michigan State lost to a worse team than Michigan lost to. Michigan lost to Michigan State. But anyway, this quote from Gary Barta is pretty hilarious. Set aside watching the games, a quote from Gary Barta, who's the head of the committee. Yeah, you know, great job, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotta doing
be,
well.
Yeah, well, and it's got to be such a great deal to be this person. Quote, set aside watching the games. Well, that's certainly a part of it. But statistically, just about every category, offensively and defensively, Michigan comes out on top over Michigan State. End quote. I mean,
set aside the result.
Yeah, set aside the, you know, the game. We watch the game, but look at the stats, everybody. The funny thing about that, of course, is, you know, then why is Oregon ahead of Ohio State?
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
the stats would tell you those two teams right now are not very close.
And Oregon lost to Stanford, which is cheeks. And but it doesn't matter. The head-to-head counts there and doesn't count, but whatever. I mean, it's all going to be figured out anyway. Now, the problem with it is the Cincinnati factor. And I swear, and I don't know where I saw this, but there was some projection that now has Notre Dame with a higher percentage chance of making the playoff than Cincinnati.
I'm telling you.
I mean, I'm serious. If the things work out to where Cincinnati could get in and Notre Dame ends up jumping over them to get in the playoff, absolutely blow the whole thing up and set it on fire.
Well, if I mean,
after you blow it up and then set it on fire.
Notre Dame, I mean, they take on Stanford last game of the year.
Oh, great.
They destroy them.
Oh,
yeah. Just bump Oregon out. Just take them out.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. I refuse to believe that this could happen. But the Michigan State thing, you could look at it like it's setting that precedent. But again, there's a difference, too. Michigan State was at home and was down 16 and had this furious comeback. And, you know, I mean, Cincinnati goes to Notre Dame and wins handily. Like, there's a difference in those head-to-head wins. Cincinnati made it clear that they are better than Notre Dame. Like, Cincinnati and Notre Dame played 10 times. I think Cincinnati wins, like, 7, okay?
I thought you were going to say 9.
Michigan State played 10 times. It's probably, like, I could, you know, 5-5 or 6-4 Michigan. So that's, like, there's no way that Cincinnati can be leapfrogged by Notre Dame.
I hope not. But I think there is a way. I just hope it doesn't happen.
I guess I almost hope that we have that scenario so we can see it play out and we can see if we still have faith in humanity or not.
Tom Brady tweeting, press conferences after a loss are like coworkers emailing you before you've had your coffee. I mean, I don't drink coffee, but I imagine that's what it's like. This comes from Tom Brady,
thanks
the Pharaoh.
Thanks for bringing up coffee. God.
Robbie, I just actually don't understand how you don't drink coffee. But that's...
It's not my thing. It's not my thing. I don't.
Are you yawning after you said those four words?
Yes, she is. I mean, I don't dislike coffee. Every time I do drink it, I'm like, yeah, okay. It's pretty good. But I never have this overwhelming desire to be like, you know what? I need some coffee.
I go to bed.
I do with Diet Coke.
Thinking of the coffee that I get to have in the morning.
Okay. That may be the sign of a problem. Maybe the sign of an issue.
Coffee is better for you than that diet soda.
Probably is.
I mean, diet pop, sorry.
Diet soda, Joe.
Mute yourself for the remainder of the show. When we come back, we'll get into the Vols. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Tune in on Tuesday, November 23rd, as the 3-seed Nashville SC faces 6-seed Orlando City SC in the first round of the Audi MLS playoffs at Nissan Stadium. Pregame starts at 6:45, and the match begins at 7 o'clock. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube today and every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Joe, let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Will from Nashville texting in, does Alabama get in with a very close loss to Georgia? That would be a two-loss Alabama team.
Yeah, that's also a great, great question. I think some of the answer, it's hard to, you can't answer that in a vacuum. I mean, there's other things that could be part of that. But I think there's a chance, yeah. And like that, so that's the thing. It's like if Alabama gives Georgia a great game, we get a great game there, and they lose a close game, and they have two losses, and they get in, a lot of people will be upset. And frankly, I'm going to be honest, I'd want them in because I want that game again, because it's probably the top two teams, which I know, and that's kind of contrary to what I just said, but there's a difference to me between that and, again, we watch Cincinnati and Notre Dame. We watch the quality of those teams right in front of us. So the argument's going to be, well, Notre Dame played a better schedule and their stats and blah, blah, blah. No, man, we saw it, and it was convincing. Cincinnati is a better football team than Notre Dame. So that, to me, is where it's all subjective, which is, to me, obviously can be problematic. Sometimes it can make for a better playoff field, and that's why they did it this way. We have an NCAA selection committee for basketball, too. But, yeah, I mean, I'd be in favor of probably an Alabama that lost a close game to Georgia being in the playoff. I'm sorry.
Well, two things on that. Number one, the Alabama loss to Texas A&M. Starting to look a little bit better just based on the way Texas A&M has played for the most part since then. But number two, they're not getting in if they lose to Georgia.
No way. No way, no how.
I don't see the committee, after they just played each other, putting them in as the one and the four. Like, I mean, Alabama, if they're a two-loss team, if they get in, there's no way they're any higher than the four.
Right.
And I just don't see the committee saying, you know what, I know you guys just played each other in the SEC title game, but let's circle the wagons, let's do it again in the 1-4 matchup. I don't see it happening.
I hear you. I don't know that I agree. I hear you. It's going to be really, if that's what it, but that's what happens. It's interesting because I think you're right. Like, how could you make them the three and try to avoid them?
There's no way.
Yeah, you can't just – I mean, that would be some serious gymnastics. That, I mean, like Gary Barta's explanation on that one would be, I'm sure, like an all-timer. But I don't know, man. I mean, if everybody watches
First off, if you're Georgia and that happens, you got to be like, are you kidding me? We just beat them, and our reward for one of the great seasons of all time is
– them again.
Let's go get them again.
Yeah.
Take them on.
I get it. But it's just like, you know, it's like if that game happens and it's as great as it must be if it's a close game, and what a statement that would be about what Alabama is at that moment and has become as a team. I mean, I think other than like utter haters of Alabama / Georgia / the SEC, I think the vast majority of college football fans would say, yes, run that back.
So if it comes down to two-loss Alabama and undefeated Cincinnati for that four spot, who's getting in?
Damn it. Don't ask me that question.
Look, man, I think it's on the table. I think that could absolutely be in consideration.
What does Oregon have left? Because you just need to get them out of there. Like, go away. Pac-12, just go away and stay irrelevant. Just get, you know, do a
– I mean, it's the Pac-12. They don't have – I mean, they've got Utah Saturday. That's it. That's the chance, right? They're on the road at Utah.
Utah is pretty good.
Utah's pretty good. If they win that game, I mean, they've got Oregon State after that and then the Pac-12 title game.
Pac-12 title game. And who would that be against, by the way?
You know, can't say I've watched a ton of Pac-12 football this year, so couldn't tell you.
There's a chance. So that's the thing. Like, if you know, that's the complication that you get them out of there. I'm just assuming Ohio State wins out, beats Michigan State Saturday, beats Michigan next week, wins the Big Ten. I mean, I think that's the most likely scenario. So I would count them in.
Right now it'd be Utah. Utah's in first place in the Pac-12.
Yeah,
South.
That's right. So there you go. Utah's in first place.
Arizona State right behind them.
I was going to say, what about if Utah beats Oregon twice? Could they get in? No, they're 7-3. So, yeah, Oregon could lose once to them for sure. So if that happens, you get them out of there. You have Ohio State. You have Georgia. You have Cincinnati. You have Alabama. You're done.
I got a text that says, what if Alabama beats Georgia in a close game and they're both in one loss? If Alabama beats Georgia, both of them are getting in.
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
And in that case, actually, I could see, and especially because this would be in the interest of not having them play each other, what I think would happen is that Alabama would probably be the three.
If they
and
beat
Georgia would probably stay the one.
No. Alabama would go to one. Georgia would go to
Alabama two. Would go to one?
If they beat Georgia? In the SEC title game? Yes.
Yeah.
And Georgia would go to two.
We'll go to two. Yeah, that's another way to lose it. Yeah, yeah. I suppose that's – I mean, it's still a bad loss. But it, you're right. It's not a disastrously bad loss. And it was a while ago.
Yeah.
But they, yeah, then they're certainly both in, and it would be easy to not have them play each other. So that'd be probably best case for the committee, you know.
Joe, very quickly on your mailbag at theathletic.com, a question about if Tennessee will ever, ever beat Alabama or Georgia. Your response. I need your prediction right now.
Well, it's two different things. Will Tennessee ever be them? I mean, I understand that looks far away right now. That's a big ask. You know, to be that level of program that those two are right now, when they are just, I mean, they are just printing money, basically. They're just, they're loading up year after year. And then whatever they don't get with their number one or number two ranked recruiting classes, they go in the portal. Hey, Henry Toto, come on down, you know. I mean, so being that level of program is distant. But beating them, I mean, they almost beat Alabama this year. I know that sounds funny with a 52-24 final, but I tell you, if you watch that game, like a couple plays go their way and it becomes this tense fourth quarter game. So yeah, I mean they'll get it. Let's also remember this. I don't know how many programs you'd put in the very top tier, but you'd put Alabama, you'd put Georgia, you'd put Ohio State, and you'd put Clemson. Would that be it? Probably. Is that it?
Is Clemson still there?
Well, that's my point. Yes. They are. They're having a down year. They have a quarterback's change. It didn't go down. Look, I mean, they're recruiting everything. Yeah, I'd say they're still there. You can't take away a team that just won two natties and is having one down year and say that they're not still that level of program. But this would be the year that you'd beat them, you know? So, like, a down year is possible for both Alabama and Georgia. Now, granted, Alabama's been pretty freaking recession-proof here.
Yeah.
But they've still, you know, they've dropped the random game to Texas A&M this year, to Ole Miss a few times, et cetera, et cetera. So can Tennessee get them on the field here and there? Yes. Can Tennessee be them? I mean, that's just baby steps.
Yeah.
And then more baby steps and more baby steps.
Coming up next, it's time for The Choice Is Yours. Joe Rexroad in the questions chair. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rex Road. We throw out different scenarios both in sports and in life. And hopefully the questions are not cheeks. Joe Rex Road in the questions chair this week. Joe Rex Road, I turn things over to you.
They might be cheeky, though.
Well, I think we could probably handle that.
I'm going to turn it over to you, sports or non-sports?
Let's go non-sports.
Non-sports. Okay, well, I want to start with a shout-out to my mother-in-law.
Okay.
Mary Matvius, who stayed with us last week, has been a wonderful mother-in-law. And as she left, she made a huge batch of beef barley soup.
Okay.
Which, honestly, I've never been a huge beef barley fan. It's fine. But this was made with, like, cut-up steak, sliced steak, with, like, huge carrots and beans and peas. And, like, the broth is incredible. And as I was eating, I was like, honestly, like, like, if I had to have one meal for the rest of my life, this could be it. Because, like, I could survive on this. It has the variety of things, the barley's in it. Like, it's got everything you need, and it's incredibly good. So, that brings me to this question. You can have one meal for the rest of your life. And not just a meal that you would enjoy, but also you need to survive for the rest of your life on this meal. Oh, what is that meal?
I got it. Okay. I already know.
All right.
Turkey Club. Hands down, right? We got our carbs, we got our turkey, bacon, you got your vegetables, lettuce, tomato, plus it's my favorite meal ever. I could eat that for every meal. So Turkey Club, hands down.
Does that count as the vegetables with the turkey, or with the lettuce and tomato?
Lettuce and tomato, yeah. That's veggies.
Okay. All right, hey, I'm just asking.
Actually, tomato's a fruit, so you got it all.
Look at me go, guys.
Give me like a taco salad. You can get the bowl that's the shell anyway, and then you do have the lettuce. And whatever you want in there, tomato, sour cream, cheese, meat, I mean taco salad.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
Is yours the beef barley?
Yeah, like that's how I came up with it. Like it never would have been, but that
taco salad. I can't believe that was my first answer.
No, that's a good answer. And I mean, I could crush that daily. But yeah, like I thought of this because I was like, this is so amazing, and it has everything in it that I think I could live on this forever. Yeah. There we go. All right, sports. You're Mike Vrabel, and you have this choice. You can have Derrick Henry for the playoffs in some capacity, you know, unknown capacity, but Derrick Henry active. But you are the number 7 seed, meaning that you need 3 road wins to get to the Super Bowl, and you have no Julio Jones. Or you have the number 1 seed, you have the bye, you have 2 home games to get the Super Bowl, you have a fully healthy Julio Jones, you have everyone else totally healthy, you have no Derrick Henry. What is your choice?
I think that I'm going to go no Derrick Henry and take the home game and the bye, because that is a playoff game essentially at that point that you don't have to play. So I will go very, very reluctantly with the home game, even though the Derrick Henry thing, even though you'd have to go three in a row on the road, which is tough. That's hard to do. Golly, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know. I'll stick with my original answer, and I will take the first round bye, the home games, and take my chances even without Derrick Henry. That's the route I'll go.
See, that's the same route I was leaning towards too, because you did say Derrick Henry in some capacity, so that's not guaranteeing full.
Yeah, I'm not saying for sure he's going to carry 30 times for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go same way as Robbie. You get the bye, you get the home games, and Julio Jones healthy. Yeah. Even though it pains me because you know it's Derrick Henry, but I think that's the safer-ish answer.
Titans got a defense. It's a defensive team.
I'm rolling with 22.
I figured you would be.
I'm rolling with 22. And, you know, it is a tougher road. Having to win on the road, you know, having to win 3 road games. But I also feel like his presence alone, if they get him back, you know, it could all end up being quite a big deal for them to have him in any capacity. But that is a tough one. All right, non-sports. A movie you love but would be better with one different actor or actress in a key role. So I know this is open-ended, and isn't always, but sometimes people have this immediately in their minds. You know, like a great movie, but there's just one role that just could have been better.
Okay. Do you have one that comes to mind?
Okay, I'll give you mine. Good Will Hunting. Have we seen Good Will Hunting?
Yes.
No.
No. Okay. It's a great movie. You should see it. We'll add that to the list.
Add that to the list.
You and Ryan Porter.
We got a long list developing.
Yes, we do. But so this is Matt. This is like what made Matt Damon and Ben Affleck stars. Matt Damon wrote this film. Robin Williams.
I should have known you were going to go with a Ben Affleck movie.
Well, and that's what it is. It's a great movie. It's a great script. It's fantastic. But I'll get Affleck's ass out of there. I'm putting Mark Wahlberg in for him. You got a Boston guy. You know, he'd be great. And you got a way better movie. Affleck has been good in one movie ever in Dazed and Confused as Ed O'Bannon. Fred O'Bannon. Not Ed O'Bannon.
I mean,
Fred O'Bannon.
My first thought is a movie that's not even come out yet, but I can tell that I would be interested in the movie, but the lead actor makes me have almost no interest. Have you seen like the preview of the new Batman coming out with Robert Pattinson in it as Bruce Wayne?
Yeah.
I can't do it. First off, you speaking of Ben Affleck, him as Batman, that was something. But
horrific.
I would rather have Ben Affleck as Batman than Robert Pattinson, and I am not joking. So I've seen these previews come out. And look, I'm sure Robert Pattinson's the nice guy. I can't do it. The only thing I think of is Twilight. I can't. I have no interest to go watch this movie, even though it's Batman and I've seen every single one of them. Can't do it.
Never seen a second of Twilight. Twilight?
I've seen Twilight, but I feel like Robbie's point, that's his. You know what I mean? Like Batman, he just can't. He can't double dip.
Yeah. There's way too many bad Batmans in the world. Yeah. He looks like probably another one.
George Clooney?
Come on, don't hate on Clooney.
Yeah, well, I like Clooney. But
he's fine. Clooney, the Batman was not great.
I mean, I like Val Kilmer, too, and yeah.
Michelle, do you have a movie that comes to mind?
But Affleck is by far the worst.
Yeah. Wow.
I feel like I'm very uncultured in the movie aspect, but I was talking about this movie the other day with a friend, Kicking and Screaming with Will Ferrell.
Oh, yeah.
You know that movie?
Oh, yeah.
It's a soccer team. I can't think of the actress who's the mom in the movie or the wife to Will Ferrell, but I feel like adding Mindy Kaling in there because she is so goofy and funny that it just would be a really good duo, and seeing her and Will Smith act side by side.
Will Ferrell.
Will Ferrell. Can you tell
Will
the
Smith,
coffee?
Definitely not in that movie.
Definitely not in that movie. Will Smith. It's the coffee. We're blaming it on the coffee this morning. Add Mindy Kaling in there, and I think I would laugh actually the entire movie.
I like that. Our buddy Hibbs texting in. People said the same thing about Heath Ledger as Joker, Robbie. That is true.
Wait, what?
Well, when it first came out that Heath Ledger was going to be the Joker, people were like, really? Is that going to work? And it did. So maybe I'm being too harsh on Robert Pattinson.
It worked extremely well.
You guys saw the Joker?
It was amazing.
No, well, this is in The Dark Knight.
This is The Dark Knight. Have you seen The Dark Knight with Heath Ledger as the Joker? Oh, man.
I don't do the Marvel stuff.
That's not Marvel.
Oh, well, okay. Any of...
Our text line's about to blow up over that one.
Oh, boy. We got issues. But remember, have a heart. We have no coffee today.
That's right.
Yeah. You got to see. Those are, I swear to you, those are very good. The trilogy of Batmans, those won't be touched. Okay. Last thing for sports. You're Danny White. You're the AD at Tennessee. And Dan Mullen resigns from Florida, calls you and says he wants this job right now. He'll take it for a ridiculously low sum. We'll bring all the good people from his staff now. Has huge hires to fill in the gaps. Do you take him or do you stick with Josh Heupel?
Well, I don't know that I can accurately assess this question because I despise Dan Mullen. So I'm saying no. I don't want anything to do with that guy. That guy sticks in my crawl and has for a long time. So, no.
Okay. That's fine. So let's say before this season, because it's easy to say no now. Like, this would have been a no-brainer before what they're doing on the field. You still, because of your dislike, you would say no?
I mean, I've despised Dan Mullen for a long time. I don't know. I'd have to think about it.
Michelle?
See, I think one of the big talking points we've just talked about UT this year is they need stability. So I wouldn't take – first off, he hasn't done very good at Florida this year.
No.
Second off, I think the worst thing for Tennessee could be just to switch up the coaching again. And they've in this coaching carousel, and I'm pretty impressed with Josh Heupel this year, as hard as it is for me to say.
What about Tennessee? Mark Stoops?
Well, where is he going? He's going somewhere, right?
He'd probably take
the LSU job, probably.
Okay, like, let's not. Let's not, guys.
Calipari going to coach LSU with him?
Ooh.
Oh, I would just fall out of my chair.
And Will Wade can just do a swap. Bring Will Wade to Kentucky.
Yeah,
fit in perfectly there.
I don't think that's gonna work. But no, I don't. I wouldn't take Dan Mullen. I think Tennessee needs stability, and Dan Mullen hasn't been too impressive this year, honestly.
There's a lot of Butch Jones vibes coming out of Dan Mullen this year.
Yeah, the thing is, I've always been a huge. It's easy to dislike Dan Mullen, but I've always been a big believer in him as a coach. So, actually, to me, this is tough because I still think he's a good coach, and this year does not invalidate his entire career. And he has a way longer and better track record than Josh Heupel.
He does.
I think I would probably hang with this because I just feel like this year, Mullen there's been a lot of damage done.
Yeah. Bob on Twitter. Joe, I'm not even about to get into a Twitter war with you, but Ben Affleck was a phenomenal Batman. Don't even come at me with this. This is from Bob.
Bob, our friend Bob?
Yes.
All right, you're muted.
Joe's just going to mute.
Next up, you're blocked and reported. I'll just mute you. He was a phenomenal Batman. Ben Affleck was absolute cheeks as Batman. Garbage. Oh, this is... He tried to talk without moving his lips. I'm Batman. It was awful.
Go watch
garbage.
Go watch Daredevil with Ben Affleck in it. There's a good one. You'll love that one.
I try to watch nothing with Ben Affleck in it. He's one of the worst actors of all time.
Okay, that's harsh.
He is. He sucks. He's the Creed of actors.
Joe doesn't need coffee today.
No, I really do, actually.
Heidi texting in from Dixon saying, that Ashton Kutcher should have been Captain Miller in Saving Private Ryan. Out of here, Tom Hanks, bring in Ashton Kutcher.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine Ashton Kutcher in any serious role whatsoever?
No.
Heidi, you have outdone yourself. That is just horrifying.
Look, I enjoy Ashton Kutcher, but I don't know if that would have...
him in that 70s show.
I don't know if Kelso leading you into battle is probably a good plan of action at that point. That is today's edition of The Choice is Yours.
Ben Affleck should have been one of the extras in
Joe always has to get the last
movie.
Word. He's got to get the last
All
word.
All right, I'm sorry. Gosh.
When we come back, we'll get back into the Titans. We'll be joined by our good friend Teresa Walker from the Associated Press. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.